My name's Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. Can y'all hear me back there?
Yes, sir.
Great. Remember the South Dixie group? I'm a recovered alcoholic. I don't want to get involved in any controversy. I swing both ways, you know. I'm recovered from I'm an alcoholic that used to have a drinking problem. So now I just suffer from alcoholism. That thing that, you know, what is it? It says alcohol is a symptom of our disease. A real disease centers on our mind, not our body. So I'm 72 years of age. I've been sober for a little over 42 years. No, a little over 41 years. I'm in my 42nd year of sobriety. You know, I was just thinking, shouldn't do that. I don't think that much. I don't think that much anymore. I used to be a great thinker. How many people here think a lot? Yeah. How's that working out for you? Is that working out for you? Well, I'll tell you, that's alcoholics for you. Great thinkers. I drank for 15 years. I started drinking when I was 15 years old. And no record in here, but, you know, when I stopped, I came a day when I was 31. So what is that, 15, 16 years, something like that. And so I've been sober over 41 years. So I don't know. I can't do the math. It would require me to think, but I'm not going to do that. I don't know. That's 26 years of recovery. 26 years of more of not drinking and recovering in Alcoholics Anonymous than when I spent time drinking. And I'm looking at them steps that we look at right there. And you know what I noticed? The first step talks about alcohol, and the rest of the steps talk about God. First step talks about entirely ready to have God remove. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol and our lives have become unmanageable, and then we stopped drinking. The rest of the steps talk about faith and God. You know, I know not all the steps say God, but I've read them all and I've done them all, and I know what they're doing. I know that fourth step. And that fifth step is all about removing any impediments between ourself and that divine spirit, that God, that's going to transform us. And I know that six and seven is about becoming entirely ready now. Serious. Entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. And I know that that's the thing that separates us out, the men from the boys. And I know that the book says that the sixth step is about that man or woman who are seriously trying to grow in the image and likeness of our Creator with a capital C, God. And I know what 8 and 9 is because I know what that's all about. I know why we have to make amends because I read Sermon on the Mount, which was one of the primary books AA is based upon. And I know about the concept of before you go to God, you have to get rid of that crap that you did to other people and you make amends, you know, and that whole thing in Sermon on the Mount where it says, if you bring your sacrifice to the altar and you have something your brother has against you, first go to your brother and fix yourself up with your brother and get right with that, and then you can come to me. So I know that that's all about God, and I know the 10th step is all about clearing away any of the other crap that's going on continuously. So instead of worrying about what they think about you or what he thinks about you or what she thinks about you or why did you do this and why did they say, instead of thinking that God stuff, you can focus on God with a clear conscience. And I know the 11th step comes right out and says it, improve your conscious contact with God. So, and I know the 12th says that's what we talk to other people about. So I know I got one step that talks about alcohol, and I've got 11 steps that talks about God and how to get to God and everything like that. And I go to these AA meetings, and I essentially hear two things. There's more than two things. This is a generalization. And I'm not putting it down. I'm just an observation. I hear, because we're supposed to tell what it was like, what happens, and what it's like now. You've heard that. This is what I hear. I hear people, when they tell their story, no matter how long they're sober, what they say is they say what's called, what we refer to as a drunkalogue. It's an interesting concept when you think about it. I've got, 41 years sobriety, right? I'm in my 42nd year, and there are people here with 10 years, and 5 years, 15, 20 years, 3 months, that have recovered from that hopeless state of mind, the body. We're not drinking anymore. And so we talk about, and we luxuriate in, and we like to hear, and it's okay. We like to hear drunkalogs. You know, they're good to hear drunkalogs. It sort of reminds us of what it was like for us. What has God done for us? If you're a new person, you're not sure you belong here, and you hear a drunkalog, you say, yeah, that's me. I'm like that. It's identification. So we got a lot of drunkalogs. And then if you go to some meetings, you hear a lot of, hear some whining and crying, right? There's some thumb-sucking cry. You hear some, oh, my girlfriend left me. I'm, like, very depressed. You know, I lost my job. I feel like killing my, you hear that stuff, you know, right? But you know what you don't hear that much? It's kind of surprising when you think about it, considering that 11 steps are devoted to it, and nobody's drinking here. Nobody's drinking here. And we're all recovering from a hopeless, you know what you don't hear a lot of? You don't hear a lot of faithologs. You don't hear a lot of faithologs, do you? You got 11 steps talking about developing a faith with God. Never apologizing for that faith in God. Understanding that all men of faith have courage. They trust their God. Your real reliance has to be on God. The thing that separates the men from the boys is the men are those who are trying to grow in the image and likeness of their creator, God. And it's the whole thing. And nobody here has a drinking problem. And all the other steps are about faith. But you don't hear anybody talking about getting up there and say, I want to give you my faith a lot. As a matter of fact, and I may be wrong about this, but I want to say it right here and right now, just in case I'm right. I'm putting a copyright on that sucker. I think this is the first time in 41 years I've ever heard anybody use the term faith a lot. So if next week in California somebody says that, I want to make sure everybody knows he got it from me. Think about it. Here we are in Alcoholics Anonymous, and we talk about drunkalogs, we talk about our problems, but nobody would dare get up and say, I used to drink alcohol, I haven't had a drink in 10, 15, 20 years, let me tell you about my faith a lot. As a matter of fact, there are some rooms and some people that would take offense at that. They would take offense. They would say, they'd come up to you and say, we don't talk about that stuff in AA. You might chase away a newcomer. And yet, isn't it strange that people come in here and they stop drinking, and you hear about, and every day in AA, you hear about a guy who says, I had a year and then I drank. I'm coming back. I got 90 days again. I had 23 years and I drank. All the time you hear about people drinking again and drinking again and drinking again. Sometimes they have to learn long-term sobriety, right? But rarely do you hear a person say, I've got 40 years and I've been rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence. I've had God remove my fear of people and of economic insecurity. I've learned to experience heaven. And I know peace. I'm experiencing the joy of living. You don't hear that often. You know what I mean? You hear drunkalogs a lot. You hear problems a lot. No faithalogs. You know, I'm thinking, and I'm just a theory. Maybe the reason there are so many people that are slipping and sliding after they have recovered from a hopeless state of mind and body, maybe the reason why people, so many people are drinking is because they come into AA and they hear about drunk a lot and they hear about problems, but they don't hear about any faith a lot. Maybe the lack of faith logs is why people drink. Maybe the lack of faith logs is why people aren't rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence. Maybe people just don't hear that there's something more than just not drinking. Maybe people don't hear that you really can experience heaven. Maybe people don't hear testimony where people are excited for God and are experiencing much of heaven. Maybe there's just not a lot of that going around. Maybe people basically see that when people even hint at stuff like that, other people say, you know, you don't talk about that stuff in AA. You know, maybe that's the problem. You ever think about that? I wonder what means would be like if, even if we just had it balanced out. Some people talk about drunk logs and some people talk about faithful logs. I wonder if there are many more people that drink after 90 days, 6 months, 10 years of treading water in here, doing what might not call sobriety, and not thinking there's anything more. I got to tell you, there's nothing more than this. I wonder if more people would really be at a different level of this deal and really doing the second step and really chasing after God if there were people that had the courage or the ability to share their faith logs. You know what I mean? I mean, look, let's face it, a drunk log's easy. Drunk log's easy. Anybody can do a drunk log. I mean, you know, you want to get up in front of a 200, 300, 3,000 people and, you know, for a half an hour and try to hold their attention, just talk about it, and then I drank. And then I drank, and then I drank, and then I drank, and then I drank. Ain't nobody going to criticize you for that, you know. Nobody's going to say, well, we don't talk about drinking in AA, you know. But nobody needs that. Nobody's drinking in AA. What happens after you stop drinking? Isn't that what the problem is? Isn't the problem? The problem's really not the drinking, is it? It's about what happens to your life and who you are and what you become after you stop drinking. Isn't that right? I got a bunch of people in here, and you want something, they're not even worried about drinking. They're not even concerned about drinking. Drinking hasn't even crossed their mind. Some people, I come up to them, you know, you might want to do this and that. They'll say, hey, don't even worry about it. Mind your own business. You got your problem. I'm not even thinking about drinking. Drinking's the last thing on their mind. And they go to a meeting, and the meeting's talking about drinking and drunk a lot. And so they figure, well, I'm at an AA meeting. But here's the deal. They're not getting fed anything they actually need. Because they figured out the drunk a lot thing 10 years ago, 5 years ago, 6 months ago. What they really haven't figured out, like Bill Wilson said, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease that I gotta keep talking about and telling other people. Or Dr. Bob said, if you're an atheist, agnostic, or have some sort of intellectual pride that keeps you from understanding what we're really trying to tell you in this book, I feel sorry for you. Your heavenly Father will never let you down. You know, so we got this deal where the stuff that is really important that will not only keep you sober for 5 years or 10 years or 15 years or 20 years, but until you die and rocket you to the fourth dimension of existence, or in my case, the fourth dementia of existence, nobody talks about. They may slip it in a little bit. They may say grateful to God and everything, but nobody would dare say, I'm going to spend the next hour talking about my faith a lot. They wouldn't say something like that. You know, they'd be booed off the stage. Well, you know, unless they were so crazy that they didn't really care about what the people in the 12-step room thought. They only focused on God. You know, the thing they say in the big book, The great fact is this, and nothing less, that God has become the central fact of our lives. We are convinced that he lives in our hearts and minds in a way which is deemed miraculous. He is doing for us what we can't do for yourself. You think they just threw that crap in there, you know? They say, above everything, we must get rid of the selfishness. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible. What's the deal? We sincerely, we utterly, what does it say? We utterly abandon ourselves to God. Abandon yourself to God and to your fellow, and, you know, help your fellows. And it's all about the God. See to it your relationship with him is right and great. What about that stuff? I don't know. Is there some connection between the faithalog and the faiths? I don't know. Is there some? Is 2 through 12 really about doing 2 through 12? Or is it about doing 2 through 12 so you can have solid faith? I mean, is it just about sort of like checking the boxes? You know, I did 2, I did 3, I did 4, I did 5, 6, 7, 8. Oh, yeah, I did the steps. But then a year later, you're drinking. Or is it about doing the steps and somehow, in some way, developing a solid faith in God? What do they call it? The arch of freedom. The arch of freedom. You know? The God thing. No, I mean, what's it really about? So why shouldn't I talk about my faith log? So I'm going to talk a little bit about my faith log. And because I think it has something to do with the 11th step. It probably has something to do with the second step, the third step, and all the other steps too. So I'm going to tell you a little story. Because in a drunkalog, you guys have heard drunkalogs before, right? So tell me if I'm wrong. Because I could do a drunkalog. I was thinking the other day, I really don't do drunkalog. I never, you know, somebody said, I never heard you do a drunkalog. I said, I could do drunkalogs. I've done a million drunkalogs, but when I think of it, they're really not drunkalogs because I never did anything really bad when I was drunk. Well, I crashed a car and almost killed a gal and almost killed myself, but I'm not, you know, that's not really bad stuff, you know? I mean, because when I drank, maybe I get in one or two fights and always lose, you know, but I never did anything really bad when I was drunk. It's the truth because most of the time when I drank, I just go to sleep. You know, like if we were all drinking here, you know what I mean? Right now, we're all drinking, having a party. They'd say, where's Russell? And I'd be lying down right here, sleeping. You know, I'm serious. I'd be sleeping. I'd just drink myself unconscious. I'd just go into my house and turn on the phonograph and think about all those girls and how they hurt me and how lonely I was. And you're just laughing. You don't know what it's like. And I think about that stuff, and then I play a song like Only the Lonely or I'm Mr. Blue or Rainy Days and Sunday. I play something like that, you know. So I didn't hurt anybody really when I was drunk. You know, the truth is, I hurt everybody on my way to getting drunk. On my way to getting drunk. Like when my wife was waiting at home. You understand what I'm saying? For me with my one-year-old child, and for 5 years, I didn't come home until 1 o'clock in the morning. And she didn't even have a husband. I didn't hurt anybody in the Alibi Lounge, but I hurt her because, I don't know, is that a drunkalog? Because I just didn't show up. You know, I mean, it was like my hurting people had to do with me putting alcohol, worshiping it in the front of my life before anybody. And the other way I hurt people is the way we hurt people now, sober, because I'm a selfish son of a bitch. And so, if I owed you $100, good fucking luck with that. You know what I mean? You know, that ain't going to happen. You know what I mean? I just didn't pay. I didn't, you know, I'm just not going to, you know, I'm just a bum. You know, but I could be a bum. Listen, I could be an obnoxious bum soaked before I came to AA. Listen, I'm so good at being obnoxious. I have been told by guys I sponsor that I can be obnoxious with many years sobriety. I've got that thing nailed down pat, you know? So why is this idea of this drunkalog, I'm sorry, faithalog important? So let me, and all I can, listen. So I start off before I came to AA, way before I came to AA, worshiping women. Believe me, I wanted what she had. I would go to any length to get it. You know what I mean? You know, in the book, it says if you want what we have and are ready to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. What about when you want what she has? I didn't want what they had. The only time I ever wanted what Maddie had is if he was a good-looking gal. Then I want what he had. Or if he had a car. If you want, that's the things I want. I lusted after and desired to have the things of this world. Because I knew, and I didn't have to go to any meetings for this. It was so clear to me that if I only had $1 million, everything would be okay. If I only had a good-looking gal, everything would be okay. If I only got laid, everything would be okay. If I only had a good job, everything would be okay. It's so clear that that's the case. I don't have to go to meetings or read a book about that. You know something? Not only is it clear to me, it's clear to the rest of the planet. I mean, all you have to do is watch TV and see a few movies and watch a few ads on TV, and you know what's clear to the planet. You know what I mean? Watch a couple of Viagra commercials, you'll see what's clear. You know, I mean, if you're not 9 years old and getting laid 5 times a week, you know what I mean? There's something wrong with you, you know. Watch what's important to the planet, so how can I be blamed? You know, so I come in here and so somehow, some way, I come in at 31, I'm now 72. Got a wife of 41 years. How the hell did that happen? You know, I have no idea, no clue. And four kids, 7 grandkids, 1 on the way, going to be 8. Self-supporting. How did this? And get this. A Jewish kid from New York who doesn't believe in God. I believe in American Express and Playboy bunnies. And I wind up a stark raving, born again deacon in a Presbyterian church that starts a ministry that every time I have a chance, I want to talk about the Lord and what he's done for me, just like Bill Wilson. Now, if you ask me, if you say to me, how did that happen? How'd you make that happen? If I tried to tell you how I made that happen, I'd be lying. I don't even know. What, after 41 years of meetings, after meeting thousands of people, after hearing thousands of deals, after going to steps, you think I could tell you, oh, it's when I made the coffee, it's when I did that. I mean, it's like a conglomerate of, it's like somebody put a whole deal into a giant milkshake and I drank it and all of a sudden I'm here. You can't even blame me for the way I am right now. I am a result of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I'd like to think that I'm a decent example of what this program can do for you. Because I've been rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence. I have no bucket list. I don't wake up and saying, if I only had this, if I only had that. The only thing that really gives me pleasure is going to meetings and trying to help other people, whether they're alcoholics or not. I'm perfectly satisfied. I happen to be going on a cruise with my wife for 15 days. I've been on many cruises and all over the place, and I'm doing it because my wife wants to do it. It's not because I'm jonesing. As a matter of fact, to be honest with you, you know, and my wife knows this, I'd rather be here than on the cruise. I don't need money. I don't need anything. I mean, I'm fine. I'm happy. You know, how does that happen? So I don't know whether I can tell you how it happens, but I'm going to tell you something tonight. I certainly can't go through the thousands of things I've been through, the million things I've been through the last month, but I want to tell you a couple of things. And let's see where you can connect the dots. I had my first sponsor was a guy named Bob Sullivan. And I graduated with the Department of Law and Mathematics. I was going for my PhD in algebraic topology, became a lawyer and all that sort of stuff, smart and everything. And I came in and I knew everything. And I was, believe me, I wanted you to know how smart I was because I knew I was brilliant. But by the time I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I had like 2 neurons working and they were waving goodbye to each other. So I wasn't doing real well. And I should have been sponsored by Albert Einstein and Jesus, but they weren't available. So they got me this used car salesman from Chicago who didn't even graduate high school. But I was in no position to argue with him. And he used to say to me, He used to sit in my office, and I'd have all these diplomas. You've heard this story before, but it's true. And I'd point to the diplomas. I said, these are my degrees. And he'd say, well, you know, Russ, rectal thermometers have degrees, and you know what they do with those. And he'd say, you know as much about life as a dog knows about his father. And he'd say, your best thinking on your best days got you in here. Now, here's the key about this. Here's the crazy thing about this. Here's the absolutely nutty thing about this. I love Bob Sullivan. I followed him around like a puppy dog. And you know why? Now, this is going to, here's the problem. I can't even get intellectual about this because I wanted what he had. And guess what? I didn't even know what the flick he had. I was like a month sober, 2 months sober, 3 months sober. I hadn't done any steps except maybe step one. And I swear I didn't know what he had. But I wanted what he had. How do you explain? You know, I see a good looking blonde. Man, I want what she has. Somebody asked me, why do you want what she has? Well, I can't explain it, but I know I got it. You know what I mean? I know I got that desire to have what she... Well, all I can tell you is there was something about Bob Sullivan who had 15, 16 years that I wanted what he had. And so when he told me make the coffee or do this, I did what he told me to do, even though I didn't understand it. Because I wanted what he had. I respected him. I loved him. And I wanted what he had. So Bob died. No, well, before Bob died, he took me to a meeting. 3 months sober, I went to a meeting, a keynote group, and there was a guy speaking named Alan Kennedy. And many of you guys have heard that name before because I've been telling this story. This is how much it impressed me. I don't know how many people, well, a lot of you guys, I know I have less than a year and everything. It's probably true. But I don't know how many people have many, many years of sobriety that to this day remembers something that happened to them that impressed them when they had like 30 days or 60 days. You know, it's a funny thing. I've been to over 30,000 AA meetings. I can't remember them all, but I remember an AA meeting I went when I was 3 months sober that like blew my mind. And a guy spoke named Dal Kennedy, had like 30 years. And I'm sitting there watching this guy. And I'm just like transfixed watching this guy. I mean, I'm hanging on every word. I can't even repeat for you what he was saying. And at the end of the meeting, I turned to my sponsor, and he was like helping people, and it was incredible. And he was enthusiastic, and he was loving, and he was strong, but he wasn't arrogant. And so I turned to my sponsor, and because I wanted what he had. You know, it says in the book, if you want what we have, and are willing to go to any length to get it, he was part of my we. He went into the we bucket. You know what I mean? Listen, I love you guys. You're the best. I know a lot of you. I sponsor a few of you. And I don't say this in a mean way. I really don't want what you have. Okay? I mean, maybe if I know you, I might want what you have. But, well, here's the reason why. You know why? Because I had what you have. I've had what you have. You understand what I'm saying? That was one of my impetuses for following these old timers around because I wanted to get rid of whatever the heck's going on. I didn't want to be worried all the time. Not that you're worried all the time. Don't take this personally. Telling alcoholics not to take things personally. Don't tell you, I'm not. I'm just making a point. The point is, I didn't want what everybody around me had. The whiners and the car. I wanted what certain people had. And I got to tell you, the people that I wanted what they had, they were like 1 in 300. They weren't like all over the place. And so Al Kennedy, I'm looking at Al Kennedy. He's like an amazing guy, an amazing testimony. I don't remember any of it being about drinking. And I turned to my sponsor. I said, that guy's great. Where does he go to meet? And that's when my sponsor says, you guys have heard the story. It's a true story. He says he's dying of cancer. I'm asking my sponsor, where is he going to meetings? This is the same guy who I said, I need money because I'm broke. And he said, I know it'll help you. You need to make coffee for the group. So I'm always used to him saying stupid shit. You know what I mean? Not answering my question. So I said, I like that guy. Where does he go to meet? He says, well, he's dying of cancer. So he did one of those. He's dying of cancer. I don't know. They teach you that in sponsor school. I'm saying, no, I'm talking about that guy who did the meeting, the happy guy, the joyful guy. He says, yeah, he's died of cancer. He's got 6 months to live. So that hit, I mean, I can't tell you that, because if I have a hangnail, that's good for 5 meetings. You know what I mean? And there's this guy, he's dying of cancer. He doesn't even mention it. And so, and you want to know something? I didn't know what he had, but I'll tell you this. I wanted Al Kennedy's sobriety. Let me tell you how much Al Kennedy impressed me. That story I just told you, and most people know this who I've seen. I've told that story for the last 41 years at every convention I've spoken to, at everything I've spoken at. I always tell the Al Kennedy story, because that's a real important story to me. Because it's part of my faith a lot. It's part of my faith a lot. Because I wanted what he had. I didn't want to just not drink. I wanted what Al Kennedy had. How do I get that thing where you're not worried about dying? How do you get the not worrying about dying thing? How do you do that deal? Okay? Because I was always worried. And then I met Joe Snyder, who was my second sponsor. The one who told me you're upset because you're upsettable. The one that gave me the book Sermon on the Mount. The one who talked to me about Bible study and things like that. And the Ray O'Keefe's. The one Ray O'Keefe. These are guys, they broke the mold. And they all had 30 years or 40 years sobriety. I wanted what he had. Then I started going to Bible study. I met John Glenn. 50, 60 years sobriety. Sitting next to me. Preacher. You know what I mean? The guy who I go out to dinner with. And I started eating. He'd say, what are you doing, Russ? He says, I'm eating. He says, Russ, you can't eat yet. We have to give thanks. I mean, this wasn't an A. I can understand an A meeting how you hold hands. I can say, understand an A meeting why you say, you know, the serenity prayer before. I get that. I can do that. Okay. But like in public? I mean, in public where people can see you, where you stand out like a sore thumb? You know, that really takes, we you know that part that says we never apologize for believing in God? That's like taking it to a whole other level. You know what I mean? You know, when you're in public, you don't even have to. The group's, nobody in the group is doing it. You're the only one. The whole restaurant, nobody's praying. You're the only one. That's like taking it to a whole different level. He's saying we can't, he says we gotta give thanks first, Russell. It's almost like he really believed this shit. You know what I mean? Now, in AA, we do it. We say the Lord's Prayer, but we don't really believe it because we do the half measures thing. You know, it's either God is either everything or he's nothing. We are either the nothing guys or somewhere less than everything, like the half measures, you know, that avail you. You know what I mean? But he's like the everything guy. God was like everything, the central fact of his life. And so I sit down, I bow my head, and he's praying one of these long Baptist prayers, you know. He's even mentioning Jesus. And I'm going like this. I'm looking around, you know, to see who's looking at me. You know what I mean? And then he finally finishes off and he says, now, Russell, now we can eat the food because it has that, it'll taste better because it's got that special ingredient. It's got the special ingredient. And like, I'm a cool, smart guy, and I'm part of my brain is saying, this is total bullshit. You know what I mean? But there's another part of my brain that's saying, man, I wish I could believe the way this guy believes. I wish I could have the faith this guy has. Do you know, I'll tell you a little secret, and this is an absolute, honest to God truth. When I was drinking in the bar, and my wife was at home, and I was trying to figure out how to get laid with another woman, or figuring out how screwed up my life was because I couldn't go out with another woman because I was married. When I was at my worst alcoholism, where I was putting down religious people, where I was making fun of religious people, where I was making fun of people that weren't living the life I was, this is the absolute truth. Because I know this is true, because there was a part of me that wished I could do that. There was a part of me that wished I could be that man. a decent, righteous, church-going, synagogue-going, whatever it is, man. But I knew it was bullshit because I knew I could never do that. I could never be that. I would always have to be a drunk because that's what I am. And there was a part of me that wanted that deal, but what's the point? I'm a drunk. I'm a piece of shit. Now that's the way I am. And so as I go along in life with John Glenn, Ray O'Keefe, all those guys, there were maybe 5 or 6 or 7 men in my life, some women, but for me, mostly men, that I wanted what these people had. And I would go to any length to get it. And I got to tell you something. When you hang around with men like that, and you focus on men like that, and you want men what men like that have, even if you don't know what they have or how they got it, I will tell you this, and I believe this to be true. Not only won't you drink, you will become those men. You will become those men. Forget about steps or whatever it is. You'll do every step in the book. You'll do everything that's necessary. But when you focus on those men and you have a desire to have what they have, you will become exactly what they are. You know, if you're a real alcoholic, you know, because I'll tell you something. When I wanted something, I went after it. I'd mortgage the farm. You know, I'd kill people to get that stuff. And I wanted what those people had. So I guess if you ask me, so how did this happen with me? How did you take a drunken, obnoxious idiot like me and put me in the position I'd have? I would just have to say it's kind of simple. You know, I don't have to. I wanted what they had, and I was willing to go to get late to get it. I wanted what they had. And you know something? I can do a lot of things, but I can't. You know what I can't do with you? Even with guys I sponsor. You know what I mean? I can't give them the desire. I can't give them the desire. If they don't want what I have or want what they say, if they don't have somebody that they're looking at, if they just want what they used to have, because everybody that comes in here, even if you want what I have, what they have, what whoever it is has, there's this other desire that still stings with us. There's a desire, a lust, a craving that sticks with us called worldly clamors. I don't care what you call it, where we're always being torn away looking at the bright, shiny shit. Always, I mean, the world is powerful, powerful. And no matter how much you're looking at that thing and you want that thing, there's another thing out there that's looking to tear you away. And I'll tell you, we don't have a shot on that deal unless you hang tough. I hung tough with these men. Every day I went out with John Glenn. Every night I was hanging around with John Glenn or Ray O'Keefe or Bob Sullivan. I mean, I hung on to these guys. I hung on to them. I had to keep close. You know, because the world doesn't stop. It's like 24/7, buddy. 24/7. The women don't stop. I'm not putting it down. It's not their fault. It's my deal. Women, cars, money, and all that never stops. Never. As a matter of fact, if you examine, if you're ever upset, if you're ever depressed, if you're ever going crazy, it's always going to be about that stuff. It's always, have you ever figured out that whenever you're depressed, it's always because you don't have it, or you want it, or you need it, or you're not getting it? I mean, there's a reason why in Six Step it says they talk about money, property, or romance. Nobody's ever going to work that thing, but we don't stop working it. But somehow, some way, if I hang around those men that I wanted what they had, and I was willing to get any length to get it, and they weren't rich, and they weren't wealthy, and they didn't have good-looking blondes hanging on to them or anything like that, if I hang around with those guys, somehow, it's like some sort of magic. It's like osmosis. I don't know what it is. I somehow get to the point where I sort of like become like them in the things of this world. And you know why? Because they were focused on him. If you want what most people will not ever get here, you got to be prepared to do what most people will never do. You know, that's the deal. And that's that. When I think about the 11th step, for instance, which is sort of like what I'm talking about, how do you get closer and closer to God? The way you get closer and closer to God is you do your best to hang around people that are trying to get closer to God. That's the whole reason why church going to Bible study helped me out, because I was surrounded by men who were going through the same shit we go through and the same stuff we go through, reading the same book we're reading, basically, and focusing on God through cancer, through anything else. You know, you got your choice of who you're going to hang out with. I'll tell you who you are. You know who you are and who you're going to be? I can tell you right now. You are whoever you hang out with. The man and woman you will be in the next 5 years depend on the people you hang out with and the books you read. That's who you're going to be. You want to see who you're going to become? You look about who you hang out with and what they're telling you and what they're saying to you and the conversations you're having. Just listen to the conversations you're having. It's about women, cars, money, sex, you know. Listen to the shit that you're talking about and who you're hanging out with. And let me tell you something. In this group, this ain't exactly Well People's Anonymous. Let me tell you something. In AA, you know that what will drag you down the most in Alcoholics Anonymous? The most? Other alcoholics. You know how you keep a crab in a bucket? Throwing another fucking crab. As soon as the crab starts crawling up, the other crab will just drag him back. You just come in here and talk about how you really went to a great Bible study. How you're really trying to focus on God. You see what happens in here in this group. You know, all you have to read is chapter agnostics and know God doesn't do well in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's why there's no faithologs. That's why you're not going to hear shit like this. You know, I mean, I say weird stuff, you know, but it ain't going to kill you, right? You know, so you'll hear 200 drunk logs and, you know, like one thing like this, you know what I mean? It ain't going to kill you, you know? You never know. There may be one guy in here that's interested in this kind of stuff. Maybe 5 years down the road, you'll remember this stuff. You never know. You know, you never know where this thing's going to take you. Thank you very much. That's all.